this morning. It will move in so fast. Can't seem to loosen my grip on the past. And I miss you so much. There's no one inside. And we're still making love in my secret life. In my secret life. I smile when I'm angry. I cheat and I lie. I do what I have to do to get by. But I know what is wrong.
Greetings once again to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across time and space, and anyone else who cares or dares to listen. This is indeed your navigator, John Lash, recording on the 26th of August, 2013, Nav Briefing number 81, current sights from the deck. I thought it would be appropriate to lead in with that little cut from a song by Leonard Cohen, In My Secret Life. Not all the phrases in that song apply to me. Certainly some of them don't. It's not crowded and cold where I live. On the contrary, it's quite warm and lacking in crowds of any kind. It's been a warm summer, but not brutally hot, as usually happens. And there has been a cool undertone in the air. And today would be designated in Merita's Gaian calendar F25, with the 25th day of fall, and B20, 20th day of the Bhairavi shift. So the 20th day of the Bhairavi shift of fall 2013. I'm considering that fall begins on the 2nd or 3rd of August, following more or less the traditional scheme of the Celtic calendar, which comes to us and survives, fortunately, from a goddess-based culture, which was also a warrior culture and egalitarian. As I pointed out, not in his image, in the historical section of the opening chapters, and I stand by this statement, there was no theocracy in Celtic culture, or among the Celtic tribes of the Tuatha Dé Danann, that is to say, the children of the goddess Dana, who was related to the river Danube. no theocracy among those people. If you read Women of the Celts by Jean Marcale, M-A-R-K-A-L-E, you get a wonderful picture of the gender relations existing in ancient Celtic culture. As far as making love is concerned, that's a phrase in the song. Are we still making love? Hey, you out there. Are we still making love in the G&E? You know, I said about that term, making love, I don't like to use it. You don't call breathing making oxygen, do you? Well, fucking is not making love, because the medium already exists. It's just a way of processing the medium. It's like in breathing, you process oxygen. Love already exists. It's the foundation of the whole universe. As far as that hackneyed and much abused and misused term, making love, goes, I guess I hit the syntax right. At least it's the syntax that I would prefer. When I wrote the introduction essay to Planetary Tantra, and in describing the conversion of the Gnostic and Sophianic source materials into Gayan Tantra, I said, this conversion of the site signals a passage from invitation to invocation, a call to make love interactive with the supernatural magic of the living earth, Gaia. So I would deem the same thing right now, you know. I would deem the same syntax change to be appropriate right now. Not just to make love anymore, but to make love interactive with the supernatural magic of the living earth. And never, never forget, love and the supernatural operate on the same frequencies. So, back to the little introductory song, another phrase that stands out. And I'd die for the truth. Well, I certainly would, and I surely will. Or die in the truth. I'm beginning to see it's the only place you can die, is in the truth. And then you see the truth about dying. Well, there are many truths about dying. But one of them is that death is real, but separation is an illusion. Anyway, I would say right now, having come back to my briefings after almost a month, I would say that the most appropriate line in that little excerpt from Leonard Cohen comes in the chorus. Hold on, brother, and hold on tight, my sister. I finally got my orders. So if you've been wondering what happened to me or what's been happening to the nav, a.k.a. the main turton, a.k.a. the Nawal of Infinity Ridge, if you've been wondering what is happening to that multiple entity, it's quite simple. In the Bharavi shift of 2013, this man got his orders. And I haven't been able to speak, basically. I haven't known what to say. I still really don't know what to say right now. I don't know what exactly to say in this briefing. I would describe to you my experience of Bhairavi instruction this time around. Now, this would be about the fourth year that I've observed the shift of Bhairavi in the summer. You know, the term of Gaia Awakening came during a Bharavi shift, didn't it? That was 5 years ago. Wow. A mere 5 years ago. Astounding. And in the subsequent years, with the beginning of the GNE and so forth, I recall that I reported on Bhairavi instruction in this manner. She is the warrior goddess, equivalent to Durga in Hindu mythology and to Sekhmet in Egyptian mythology, and to the lion-headed Dakini who instructed Padmasambhava, Simamukhi. So Sima means lion. So I indicated that as far as I could tell, she instructs in the matters of sacred anger, and she does not instruct in verbal syntax, although I did receive one-line terma from Bhairavi, a terma consisting of one line. It's been my impression up till now that she does not transmit in the kind of cognitive signaling that can convert into language. Rather, it converts directly into body language. Does not convert, I should say, into left brain linguistic syntax. Her instruction converts directly into body knowledge, and it is like having body knowledge installed in your system, in your body. So I have been undergoing that experience now for about 3 weeks. You may recall that at my last briefing, I was in a moment of huge suspense. During the 18 days from the Rhonda moment on 21st of July to the 8th of August, I was experiencing a great suspense. And I was experiencing a suspension, a seeming suspension of certain features in the ordinary world, in the ordinary material world, a suspension of certain effects in the tonal. So, as you know, I was asking the question during that suspenseful waiting period, as it were, how subjective is this experiment? Now, I was describing the sky, the cloudless sky, that has continued to be exactly as I described. What about the vulture omens? Well, the vulture omens continued. And every single day that I get up, that I have gotten up during this month, whatever time of the late morning or early afternoon it may be, as soon as I step outside and come up on the upper terrace, bingo, there, soaring in a thermal, generally in the direction of south-southeast, is a single vulture. I've got this single solitary vulture on my case. My guardian Dakini, I am certain. 5 years ago, during that 18-day period, I saw for the first time the Nirmanakaya manifestation of Kali in vulture form. I believe I've described that. By that, I actually mean that the Dakini power emanating from the Aeon Sophia materialized as a particular vulture, a particular one. Now, that was 5 years ago. The vulture that I see now, and that vulture then was about 2 to 3 years old. The one I see now is also about the same age. Interesting, huh? It's not like an older vulture, which would be 8 years old, in which the wings become darker and more ragged. So I've happy to report that I am under surveillance, not the kind of surveillance that people are freaking out about on the planet, not the surveillance of the NSA, but the surveillance of those infernal powers in the Shakti cluster. I also like to report that it's been extremely calm here. And only on one day did I see a sky crossed with chemtrails. And that was last Friday. That was Friday, the 23rd. And what's really interesting about Friday the 23rd was that I went into town on that day to see someone that I know in town who lives entirely in the Tonal. Now, I do know a few people in town. I rarely ever call him up and ask to meet for coffee, but I did so on that day. And when I woke up on that Friday and looked out at the sky, it was full of chemtrails, as many as you get here, which is not a lot. So there you go. When I went into the Tonal, deliberately, when I made a choice, that's how the sky looked. I came back down at the end of that day, Friday, it was all gone, and there hasn't been any more since then. Now I'm noticing something in the texture and color of the sky, something remarkable. And I have another observer who is a diligent crew member. And an artist with keen perceptions of nature, that would be Kundry, who's a painter. And she seconds my observation. In fact, she gave me the term for it, membrane. The membrane, in this particular instance, Kundry compared to the membrane on the inside of an eggshell. So you know when you crack an egg open, you see the color of the shell, and then inside it's white, and then you have the yolk and the clear albumin of the egg. But if you look at the inner concavity of the shell, you'll see that it has a white membrane attached to it. And somehow the dome of the sky, which feels more like an oval dome, an egg-shaped dome rather than a round dome for some reason, appears to have this kind of membrane over it. Well, contemplate that notion for a while, and I'll see if I can get back to it here at some point in the upcoming briefings. As it stands right now, my friends, I have so much somatic knowledge on board that I don't really know where to begin this briefing or what to talk about. One of the reasons I haven't done a briefing since we came out of the stall is because at the moment of coming out of the stall, I had my total attention directed upon the realization that I have received my orders, which is to say my orders as the leader of the Kalika War Party, that is the central group in the first rank, the male warriors, under Kali, and also in other respects of Kalika, magic, other respects as well. Now, this is a lot for me. I mean, as you know, I'm generally on overwhelm, but this is getting into the heights of the immeasurable, really. The strongest impressions that I've had over the last month can't be put easily into words, my friends. So I'm going to have to eke them out and wring them out as best I can in this briefing and the next two or three to follow. In one respect, you could say I'm entirely on a new wavelength. My assemblage point has been knocked ever deeper into the Nahual. I mean, that would express it very well. Almost on a daily basis now, I find myself standing in front of realizations that I never imagined I would have. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. For instance, when we began the GNE, and when you came on board to be on the navigation deck with me in June and July of 2011, and some of you later on, I never anticipated that I would be teaching the deepest secrets of the third attention. I never even anticipated that I would bring up the third attention. We certainly have had our hands full with the first and second attention. So this is something I'm living with, and I'm, hate to use the word adjusting, but I guess in a way it fits, you know. I'm adjusting to this intel, this input, this instruction on a scale and scope that I have never, ever had before. Another strong impression of this cycle regarding Bhairavi is this. She is the manifestation of Durga. She is the ferocious lion mother, the ferocious lioness who goes into a murderous rage to protect our cubs. She is that. This is Bhairavi. Bhairavi represents the ferocious rage of the Aeon Sophia to protect the Anthropos. And those who are instruments of the Anthropos are her cubs. Well, you sort of knew that before, right, didn't you? And me as well. What I've come to realize in this cycle is something that just completely slipped my mind about Bhairavi. And what is that? Well, she is one of the 10 Mahavidyas, right? And the Mahavidyas are desideristic goddesses. The desideristic goddesses of the Sri Vidya mysticism of Dravidian India, which is incorporated into the Shakti cluster, are known to be agents of your every desire. And that means your personal and selfish desires, your material desires, what you want materially, cars, houses, boats, the ability to travel, what you want emotionally and personally in your life, what you want sexually in your life, especially what you want sexually. Consider also all that you want purely for the beautification of your life, the material beautification, beautiful clothes, everything that you want for comfort in your home, and whatever materially gives you pleasure. All of these desires come under the domain of the desideristic goddesses, called the Mahavidyas. Now, let me clarify something here for a moment. 5 years ago, in 2008, in August, I had ordered and was reading the book Vajrayogini by Elizabeth English. And if you turn to the third page of that book, well, this is what she says. She says that she's talking about tantras, the tantric writings and the different classes of tantras. And she says that there were so-called performance tantras, which are called Karya Tantras. And these came to be written down around the mid-7th century. And then she says, despite their status as tantras, religious teachings supposedly revealed by the historical Buddha, these classes of writings hold essentially ritual manuals and dharanis, that is, rituals of meditation, concerned with supernatural desiderative attainments. Desiderative, or desiderative. So, these desiderative attainments, by the way, are technically called in Sanskrit siddhis, which means occult powers. And she gives an example such as locating treasure, alchemy, flying, invisibility, forcing access to heavenly realms, warding off evils, and so forth. So these goddesses grant material and personal desires. And bear in mind as well that when you read into the lore of the Mahavidyas, you find that some of them grant powers to harm others, powers to render your enemy sick, to blind them, to paralyze them, and even to kill. And why would the same goddesses who grant your personal desires also grant those kind of powers? Well, because if there happen to be people who get in the way of you having your desires, then you can dispense with them by calling upon a desideristic goddess to knock them out or kill them. And this is part of the Gaian sorcery that comes with the term of Gaia Awakening. Okay? Now, just to be clear about the terms here, when I encountered this word 5 years ago in the book by Elizabeth English, and I just went back and looked at it recently, she used the term desiderative or desiderative, which I changed into desideristic. Okay? Looking back on it, I think I did that simply because desideristic sounds better to me and it's easier to pronounce. You know, desideristic comes directly from the term desideratum, which is a Latin word meaning that which is desired, is the desideratum, which comes from the desidere, which is the root of the word desire. And desidere literally means from the stars. So desire comes from the stars, and the fulfillment of your desire comes from the star goddesses who dwell upon the earth. And these are the Gaian Dakinis. And also, propose that you might want to go look at an essay called The Future of Rapture, number 2, in Planetary Tantra. And this is an essay where I outline the distinct features of the terma of Gaia Awakening. And there are 13 of them. But the 8th one is this: the combination or complementation of desideristic and liberationist aims. So, to quote that essay, Mahavidyas grant personal desires and wisdom dakinis guide toward transpersonal realization simultaneously with no contradiction or conflict. This cooperation of the two different kinds of aims is a striking feature of the new archetype, not found in any previous religious doctrines or precedent belief systems. Hence, this archetype will be adopted by those who recognize and embrace the unity of these seemingly preclusive aims and wish to put that unity into practice. End quote. If I could put it in a single sentence, I would say that the encompassing paradox of this union of desideristic and liberationist aims is that the Gayan Dakinis grant all desires to those who have transcended desire. But the transcendence of desire comes through desire. It comes through having your desires and not through surrendering or abandoning them. So as I've said before, Kala Tantra is the path of liberation through desire. That stands in high contrast, obviously, to the ordinary and conventional conceptions of Buddhist teachings stemming from the historical Buddha, assuming that the path to liberation or the path to enlightenment requires liberation from desire. Well, I'm here to tell you that I got my orders through Bhairavi. They're downloaded directly into the body. They don't even go through the brain. And so much instruction coming from her agency, from her role as a desideristic witch of the Shakti cluster. Not only is Bhairavi desideristic, as far as I can see, she's desideristic on a scale that exceeds that of all the other desideristic goddesses combined. This is no exaggeration, my friends. I'm putting this over to you in the way that it's come to me. So I have been walking around my little Tertan's palace here in Andalusia pretty much dumbstruck. I mean literally with my jaw hanging open at the scope and intensity of this Bhairavi download. Now I'm certain that the impressions I've had, and you as well, because I'm sure you're detecting and observing and sensing and intuiting much of what I say in your own way and within the circumstances of your own reality. But I'd venture to say that the scope and intensity that I've been feeling from Bhairavi has been amplified by the fact that around the 14th of this month, into the first week of her shift, we began to pull out of the stall. And the lunar apogee, which was stalled at 2 degrees of Cancer at the feet of the twins, is advancing. And so at the next apogee surge, which is on the 30th of August, it will be at 7 degrees of Cancer. So the lunar apogee is quite rapidly and dramatically moving out of its stall, and this can be sensed as a tremendous momentum. And into that momentum, into that turbulence, you find the power of Bhairavi taking form in your life. Now, I won't even try to cover any of the elements of direct somatic instruction that I've received this month in this briefing. I will cover them in the next one to follow and the one after that. I have to take them one at a time, and I have to stop and steady myself to do so. I mean, this is a situation where the Nahual, whose role it is to steady the approach to the unknown, has got to steady himself, because the hit is really tremendous. Just give you one more example of the hit before I go into the particulars of this briefing, that is to say, the current sights to be seen from the navigation deck. during the Bharavi shift, on the eighth day, that's a Fibonacci number, which corresponds to August 14th, 2013, I found the name for something that is absolutely essential to understand what is wrong with this experiment and what stands in the way of correcting it. Previous to finding that word, that term, it's a word of seven letters, and it's an odd word. And previous to finding it, I only had a sense of what that word defines. And you as well have the same sense, because from the moment that we observed the Jupiter transit in connection with Elnat, that is the star marking the upper horn of the bull, from the moment that we observed that a while back, we also, in the GNE, you and I, have been developing this intuition. Now, at that time, I said that there is a DC current in the polarity of divine imagination, remember? You might want to rephrase the question that I put into channel 16 initially, so that we could all concentrate telepathically and coordinate ourselves toward the objective of defining the polarities of divine imagination. So the question is, what are the polarities of divine imagination? And the answer that came in the course of the Jupiter transit between the horns of the bull was that there is a AC, or alternating current, connected with the southern horn, and a DC current connected with the northern horn. Remember that? So the alternating current and direct current. So what is the alternating current? Remember, the question is about the polarities of divine imagination. It's not about human imagination. And it's not even about the power of the luminous epinoia, which was added to the calibration of the antipodes as an emergency measure by the goddess Sophia when she saw that the experiment would be deeply impacted by the archons. No, it's not that. This is just the dynamic force of her divine transhuman imagination, aeonic imagination. And that aeonic imagination flooding from the Aeon Sophia has two polarities which are entirely material. So I'm reiterating this lesson. One of them, by entirely material, I mean to say that they are concrete and palpable and can be observed in the natural world. So, one of them, the alternating current, is libido and the reproductive current. Although libido is not, of course, confined to reproduction. So, it's not about the goddess's power of fertility. No. Fertility is part of the sexual equation, and women conceive. But the essence of the AC current is the pleasure drive of the libido, the hedonistic libido. And the fact that hedonistic energy and pleasure are healing and regenerative forces. So that is how we in the GNE identified and defined one of the polarities of divine imagination. And then remember that I proposed that the other polarity be called the DC current, direct current. It is related to Thelete, who may be identified with the star Elnas. So you can call it the Theletic current. And from the moment that I introduced these terms, we've had a growing intuition about something. And I can now say exactly what it is. And I can now say that I am right on the edge of beginning to talk about the sacred masculine. Because I know what is the essence that defines the sacred masculine of the Anthropos. And I did not know that until this month, and I was not able to put a word on it until the 14th of August, less than a couple of weeks ago. So that also was a tremendous event for me. And of course, I intend to speak at length about the sacred masculine and to tell you what this word is. And of course I intend to do that, and of course it is with great pleasure that I shall do that. But I'm not going to go there in this particular briefing, because I need to actually pull together some of the current navigational factors so that I myself, along with you, can get back on course in the exercise of the GNE. And the main exercise of the GNE, as you know, is in observing events and the timing of events. And that includes as well observing omens in the sky and other kinds of events. So this is what I am calling the current sights seen from the deck. In the remaining half hour or so of this briefing, I'm giving you a rundown on these sights. This is only introductory, because some of these sights need to be considered in more detail and at greater length. But this is an introduction to some key events that have happened quite recently. The first one occurred on June 9th. Now, it so happens that on June 9th, if you go back in the calendar, there was, in fact, that was, in fact, the first day of the cycle of Idris. And on that day, kicking off the cycle of Idris for 2013, there occurred an apogee surge, the lunar apogee in 2 degrees of Cancer, locking into its stall position. So at that moment, I'll have you recall, June 9th, the apogee locked into its stall position, and it unlocked from that stall position a week ago, around the middle of August. At that moment was the most significant stall, because Jupiter was approaching the point of the lunar apogee. This is called a converge. And it was at 27, 28 degrees Gemini, putting it out in the horns of the bull and putting it in close proximity to the Crab Nebula. So this was a tremendous omen, a tremendous moment. And at that particular moment, I posted nav briefing number 70, which was called A Very Great Fact. And you know what the very great fact is. So, what is the sign or the current sight or omen in the world at large corresponding to that moment? Well, if you go on the internet and you type into the search engine Emilia, A-M-I-L-I-A, crop circle, June 2013. And what comes up are various images and a couple of short YouTube clips of a crop circle that appeared in Italy, of all places, on that very day. Now, for some reason or other, during this month, not when it happened, but during this month of August, I came across that crop circle. And the minute I saw that crop circle, I said, this is a schematic design of the calibration of the anthropos. Now, I was pretty stunned by that, and I naturally asked myself, how can that be? And I don't know how it can be. I still have to think about it. I don't know how it can be, and I don't want to comment yet. I would prefer to dedicate a good part of a NAV briefing to this crop circle, which shows the actual structure of the calibrated human genome. And I just don't know what to say. I mean, how do I know that? The instant I saw it, I said to myself, or myself said to me, that's what it is. How that could be is another topic. So this is a major omen coming out of the world of crop circles, but I understand that the general phenomenon of crop circles this year has been faulty, and that there have been disappointing manifestations, and that the season has been, on the whole, disappointing, to the point where those who run the tours in England are having difficulty keeping up interest and having difficulty getting the funds for flyovers. Well, this is very good news, because as you know, I don't consider in general that the crop circle phenomena is anything supernatural at all. I think they are just target practice designs used by evil-meaning people who have the technology of the Shiva grids, or that is to say, what do you call it? The scalar weapons, okay? But this is like an enormous breakthrough on the very day of an apogee surge. All right? The other thing is that yesterday, according to many astrologers, yesterday, 25th of August, there was a great formation in the sky called the Grand Sextile. Now go look this up. Search for Grand Sextile, August 2013. You'll come up with various designs. Now this is purely an astrological thing. This kind of stuff doesn't belong in the GNE, because the people who are constructing or observing these types of designs are astrologers who never look at the sky. They don't know what the real sky constellations are. They're working with certain geocentric configurations that arise due to the combination of the various planetary orbital cycles, and these combinations arise time and time again. One of the most famous of these combinations was the great fire triangle of, I believe it was August of 1987, which was thought to signal the so-called harmonic convergence. Well, this is the kind of hyped-up event that is really not anything but a contrived kind of vision that comes up in the mind of astrologers. In other words, it's a mental fabrication based on the observations of geocentric positions of the planets. Now, in fact, astrologers have been giving a great deal of attention to two occurrences of this grand sextile, one of which was at the end of July, 28th of July, and then others are saying that there is a recurrence of it right now on the 25th of August. Now, let me just run down the positions of the grand sextile of the 29th of July, which are somewhat similar to the current one. And these are, again, part of the current sights to be seen from the navigation deck. The sextile is set up like this. Jupiter and Mars are in about T 10 Cancer. Sextile to Venus in 9 Virgo. Sextile to the Saturn in 6 Scorpio. Sextile to Pluto in 10 Capricorn. Sextile to Neptune and Chiron in 5 and 14 Pisces, respectively. And for the sixth point of the grand sextile of 29 July, astrologers require the most fast-moving planet, the moon, to form that point. And so the moon is located around 6 or 7 degrees of Taurus, opposite Saturn in 6 degrees of Scorpio. And so there you have it. You'll go find that grand sextile for that date, and you'll see that it forms the notorious six-pointed star or Star of Solomon. But it only exists for a day or so during the time that the moon is in the position to provide the sixth point. And then the same thing applies for the one occurrence, the second occurrence of this sextile at the end of the month of August. It only occurs when the moon is transiting that part of the sign Taurus, which, by the way, is, as we know, directly in front of the satanic head of Cetus. Of course, the astrologers who are carefully observing and elaborately commenting on this event do not know that. While this is a remarkable fact that the formation of the sextile is momentarily defined by the moon when it transits in front of the satanic head of Cetus, what does that tell you? Well, it tells you probably the same thing that it tells me, is that there is something to be learned about the so-called satanic power of the Seal of Solomon at this time. The satanic power of the Seal of Solomon, or the Star of David, which is the symbol of the state of Israel. Now, I'd also have you note that the difference between the grand sextile, sextile meaning planets in separation of 60 degrees from each other, of the 29th of July recurs on the 25th of August, but it has the appearance of disintegrating. And while it is graphically and visually evident that the July 29th sextile is very close to a perfect sextile, with planets only being a few degrees out of the precise orbs, as they're called, while that is obvious, it is equally obvious that the follow-up sextile shows a definite disintegration. So what does that say to you, my friends? Well, probably the same thing it says to me, is that the power of a satanic nature, that is to say, adversarial to humanity and adversarial to the divine experiment, that is invested in the Seal of Solomon, is disintegrating before your eyes. And this indeed, as you know, is an event to be anticipated in the GNE. I can't remember in which briefing I cited this point, but I said that in the process of correction, some members of humanity who participate consciously in her correction will reclaim, for the benefit of humanity, two powerful symbols. One of them is the Star of Solomon, so-called the Seal of Solomon, which was originally a tantric design representing the fusion of male and female energies in sacred sexual intercourse. The male triangle being pointing upward, the female triangle pointing downward. And additional to that sacred symbol, which has been hijacked by the, quote, Satanists, unquote, is the symbol of the swastika, which represents the core force working in the atmosphere of the earth of the Shiva grids. The core force of the Shiva grids is represented by the swastika. The full-blown scale and scope of the fractal complexity of the Shiva grids is represented by the yantra of Sri Vidya. And this yantra of Sri Vidya is, of course, intimately connected with the Sri Vidya mysticism of the Mahavidyas. If you do a little probing into the vast amount of astronomical speculation concerning these grand sextiles, just concentrate on the first three or four links that come up in the search engine, you'll find that there is a clear understanding in this discussion that the July 29th event represents technically and geometrically a true grand sextile. But the following event in August does not. And not all astrologers are honest enough to point that out. So I guess some astrologers who didn't get on the... Astrologers are very competitive and egotistical, and they like to, you know, get a leg up on every other astrologer. So apparently some of the astrologers who didn't get on the bandwagon when the first geometrically accurate sextile occurred came on and claimed that a second one was going to occur. But you'll find if you look at some of the articles, like one I'm looking at here by Alexandra Siho, grand sextile on August 25th, 2013. Maybe not. This astrologer is honest enough to say, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but unfortunately there is no grand sextile occurring on that day, end quote. That doesn't bother us at all, does it? Because what we are observing is the disintegration of the Star of David in the heavens. And what is the Star of David? It is the logo of the satanic Zadok or Zadokite faction, who are the self-declared enemies of humanity. You know, if you want to know who the enemies of humanity are, you don't have to speculate. You don't have to make a list and go back in history and try to work it out. You just have to add to the question, who are the enemies of humanity, the word self-declared. And once you add that, the answer is obvious. And since the word Satan or satanic means adversarial, then I would apply that term to those people who find their identity in the Star of David, which is hijacked from ancient Hindu tantric practices of sacred sexuality. And so they find their identity in what? In setting themselves as a tribe apart from all the tribes and all the human families, and putting themselves in a self-declared adversarial position to humanity at large. No mystery about it anymore. And you could say that if there is a range of corresponding events occurring in the collective social mind that reflect this disintegrating sextile, then those events would be everything that points to the fraudulence and of Israel, the fraudulence of the state of Israel, and everything that exposes the deceit and murderous depredation that operates under that symbol. So much for one aspect of the grand sextile. Now let's look at something else that's occurring. I would make to you this proposal. Let's envision even a greater disintegration of the grand sextile or Seal of Solomon, the two interlocking triangles in a perfect symmetrical arrangement. Let's picture a further disintegration. Suppose that the current sights in the sky, the celestial omens that we observe as navigational indicators, show an even further disintegration of that archetypal symbol. Imagine that you could see that in the sky. Well, you can. And this is where you would look. First, you look in the dawn sky. And in the dawn sky, what you see now is, of course, Jupiter standing in the lower legs of the twins right now. Remember that at the beginning of August, Jupiter entered the twins, and now it's moving into the body of the twins. Now, we looked for a long time at the constellations in close proximity to the twins. We looked at the bull with its two horns, and then the constellation of Auriga, or the charioteer, related to it, because the star marking the northern horn of the bull, El Nat, also belongs to Auriga, the charioteer. And remember how I described in September of 2012, sitting on my terrace out here, how I came to the perception of the celestial anchor. That happened because at that moment, Jupiter was exactly positioned between Aldebaran in the eye of the bull and Elnat. And that when Jupiter came into that position, it defined the center of the cross beam of the celestial anchor. And because the center was defined, the whole configuration of the anchor came into definition, and you as well were able to observe it. So what happened at that moment was that the motion of Jupiter against the background of the starry constellations prompted a visualization which would not occur if Jupiter was not in the picture. Well, the same thing is happening right now. Jupiter is again prompting or cueing another visualization. And that visualization consists of the following. There is a straight line from Aldebaran, not to Elnat, but to the brightest star in the constellation of Auriga, which is called Capella. So draw a line from Aldebaran across to Capella. You can do this in the morning sky, by the way. Then if you come down to Elnat, which you will recognize at the northern horn tip of the bull, you'll see that that forms a down-pointing triangle. Well, of course, it always does, because those three stars are always there. But hold on for a second. Where is Jupiter? Well, if you look, you'll see that Jupiter lies in a straight line down from Elnat in such a way as to form an elongated triangle with Jupiter at the tip. And what you actually see when you look at the two triangular shapes together is a tetrahedron. There is a tetrahedron in the morning sky formed with the assistance of Jupiter. Remember, Jupiter is the celestial guide. Jupiter is the terma. The sky writing presents a tetrahedron. Well, what is a tetrahedron? Well, technically speaking, the Seal of Solomon does not merely consist of two interlocking triangles. It consists of two interlocking tetrahedrons. But now that it's disintegrating, one of those tetrahedrons has been liberated and is floating in the sky in the morning. It's lower tip is defined by Jupiter. Is that amazing or what? Now, you might wonder, well, if the Seal of Solomon, which has been hijacked and invested with a satanic power, is entirely disintegrating, then you might expect that another triangle, the second part of that configuration, is appearing somewhere else in the sky. You could form that question. I did. And how would you know where to look? How would you know where to look for that other triangle? Because the two triangles have now been separated. It's necessary to separate them. It's necessary to restore one of those triangles, which would be the masculine one, for reasons to be revealed, even though it appears as the feminine one because it is pointing downward as viewed from the northern hemisphere. There's a reason why the masculine triangle is pointing downward and why it reveals itself as a full tetrahedral form, because it is reacquiring the dimension of its original power as a tetrahedral form. Okay, so the other triangle, originally the feminine triangle with a point downward, this appears somewhere in the sky, and maybe we could say, well, maybe it appears with its point upward, you know, as a complementary conversion. Or anyway, it's a great idea, it's fascinating, but how would you know where to look for it, where to find it? Well, how about this? Hang on to your underwear, me mateys. It just so happens that a little over a week ago, an amateur astronomer caught the presence of a nova, that is an exploding star, in the sky. This occurred just at the moment of coming out of the grand stall of the summer of 2013. Just at the very moment of pulling out of this stall, at the very moment also when I got that word to be revealed in an upcoming briefing, the word that is the key to the power of the sacred masculine, just at that moment, an exploding star appeared. Now, an exploding star is something that draws human attention to the sky, even that of people who would not ordinarily look at the sky. Right? By the way, nova and supernova, I have come to understand over many years, can be read to indicate direct intervention of the pleromic aeons into life on Earth. Okay, so there is a nova, and where is it? Well, it's in the constellation of the dolphin, or Delphinus. Now, it's rather odd that while I was up in Belgium, I spent a bit of time talking about Delphine Boel. Strange that that coincides with the position of this nova, which is in the constellation of Delphinus, and it is called Nova Delphini 2013. And it is very close to the eye of the dolphin. However, I want to point out something. That many years ago, I did a drawing of the constellation of Aquila, which is very close to the dolphin, just off to the right of the dolphin, of Aquila the eagle. The brightest star in Aquila is called Altair, and the form of the constellation of Aquila is a triangle with its point upward. Not only that, if that wasn't enough to get your attention, but the star Altair in Aquila belongs to a configuration known around the world to everybody who watches the sky, known as the Northern Triangle. The Northern Triangle consists of Deneb in the tail of the swan, Altair in the eagle, and Vega in the lyre. And so there is a huge triangle And one star at one corner of that triangle is at the peak of another triangle and very close to that formation, that triangular formation of Aquila, is Nova Delphini 2013, calling from the universe upon the intention and attention of the entire world. You have to be a practiced observer to notice the tetrahedral structure in the dawn sky. But just consider this nova. These novas are extremely rare. You know, the last one we had was a supernova, and that was in February of 1974, I believe. So, just consider that the aeons themselves, the Pleuromic aeons, the star gods, have produced this nova to bring human attention to that part of the sky where the second component of the seal of Solomon is present. What's happening right now? Right in front of our eyes and depicted in the cosmic sights that we see from the navigation deck is that the two parts of the seal of Solomon have to be separated and broken apart for a moment so that they can be reunited and reintegrated in the original sacredness of that union of the genders, male and female. And the union and reintegration of those two gender powers in full sacrality happens immediately with the breakup of the seal of Solomon. It happens immediately. As soon as they are broken apart so that the satanic energy that has been incorporated into them disintegrates, the new formation of sacred sexual union occurs simultaneously. I think this is the omen that we've been waiting for in the GNE, and it marks the moment when the sacred masculine really can emerge on this scene. As you know, and as I know very well, those of us in the GNE have been perplexed, baffled, exasperated, wondering when the men are going to show up, wondering when the sacred masculine component is going to come into place and lock into the sacred feminine component. And I would say that that moment is the end of August and the beginning of September 2013. And the omens in the sky that point to that moment are particularly vivid. So I need to go further into this process and elaborate on it in an upcoming briefing. But let me just add one other point regarding the position of the second triangle. Second triangle is really indicated by the formation or signature of the constellation of Aquila, which is a triangle with its point up, but its base is missing. And I determined many, many years ago in Santa Fe, when I was looking at the constellations from the Llano above my house on Palace Avenue, that the constellation of Aquila can be pictured as a dakini. And I actually made a drawing of it called Dakini with Five Ornaments. And this dakini with five ornaments consists of the main body of the constellation of Aquila, but around her, she has five ornaments, which are an eagle headdress, an arrow called the constellation Sagitta, a dolphin companion called Delphinus, and two other minor constellations, representing a seahorse and an elf. So those are the five ornaments, as it were. Those are the five companion constellations, which are minor and small constellations, surrounding the constellation of the Dakini. And it is in that area that this nova occurs. I would just add to that, that if there is any constellation in the sky that can be assigned to Vivi herself, then it is the constellation of Aguila the Eagle. The Dakini form of Vivi in her celestial epiphany is a transformation of the constellation of Aguila the Eagle. Okay, that's a lot. That's a lot of omens. That's a lot of sights. The one final thing that I want to add is something that you may also research at your pleasure. It so happens that at the very moment that the mothership is pulling out of the great stall of the summer of 2013, the space probes launched from the Earth, known as Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, have reached the limit of the heliosphere. They have reached the limit of the heliosphere, which is technically the limit of the boundary of the solar system. And if you go to YouTube and you type in New Surprises at the Heliospheric Boundary, Part 1, you will find a discussion in the channel Thunderbolts Project of the significance of this event. And you will find Wall Thornhill, one of the primary scientists of the Thunderbolts Project, which is the Electric Universe and Plasma Cosmology people, explaining that the data that is coming back from these probes is totally baffling in terms of the current model of the solar system, but totally and coherently confirming the Electric Universe model of plasma cosmology. And as you know, I have said before that the paradigm of modern astrophysics compatible with the Sophianic myth of the Aeon Sophia is plasma cosmology. And so this event is a huge wake-up call for the scientific minds of this world to reframe their understanding of the dynamics of the entire solar system. And there is more to be drawn from this event as well, and I look forward to elaborating that in the NAV briefings coming your way very soon. So that's it for now. Thanks as ever for your attention and your devotion. Marching through the night.